This week on The Right Side, we're 5 weeks away from the election of a new leader for the Conservative Party of Canada. We have a showcase of five candidates who we believe will finish in the top five. Listen for our take on the candidates without bias and sensationalism. This is The Right Side, Episode 13, recorded Thursday, April 20th, 2017. Our collection of conservative candidates. Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Right Side. Shane and Patrick here this week, as per usual. This week, as we mentioned, we do have a bit of a special here, but welcome back, Patrick.
It's good to be back, and good to be here for this very special episode of The Right Side.
Yeah, we're taking a bit of a break from the news this week, mainly because of the time of year, and we're going away this weekend through various time commitments and whatnot, so we thought, okay, so we can't miss a podcast, so we're going to do something special. Something that people are going to be able to get some use out of, particularly with the upcoming conservative election race that's going to be ending at the tail end of May. Granted, at this point, the membership deadline has closed, so new members cannot sign up and vote. As a result, everyone we're talking about here will be on the ballot at the end of the day come May. So basically, our goal for this week is to go through what we feel are the top five candidates and will come out as the top five candidates in the race and explain a little bit about them and say what kind of policies they might bring to government should they be elected and ultimately defeat Trudeau in 2019. So we chose five, and I think we're fairly confident about the top two or three, right?
Yes, I think there are a very clear, probably three front runners, and then there's a few more in the middling, and then there's the like half of them at the bottom, probably.
Right. And as we always say on The Right Side, our job is to cut through the sensationalism and bias that you see in the mainstream media. So as a result, you have cases in the media where the media is asking various candidates, are you going to be able to keep the Conservative Party together after this, as if the media is cheering for a split of the Conservative Party to happen. So what we have done here at The Right Side, in an effort to maintain the fact that we want to cut bias out and remove sensationalism from what we hear, is that we have randomized the list of candidates who we are going to be talking about this week. So you are not hearing this in any order of our preference or any order that we feel that they are going to finish. This list was randomized prior to starting this podcast. So,
and not only that, we're also we're only giving you the facts. We're giving you who they are, what they did before politics. We're giving you what they want to do if they're elected leader, and what their supporter base is, and who they will probably appeal to. So we're just giving you the facts. We're not making any opinions on it based on biases, and we're not giving any sensationalism. We're the true and steadfast Right Side.
And more importantly, we're not telling anyone out there who might be a Conservative Party member, oh, you should vote for candidate X instead of candidate Y. So Our candidates we're going to be talking about today are Kelly Leach, Erin O'Toole, Kevin O'Leary, Andrew Scheer, and Maxime Bernier. And that, of course, means that we believe that these candidates in some form or another will fill out the top five of the Conservative leadership race at the end of May. So, as we said, in no particular order, let's start off with Kelly Leach. So Kelly Leach is an MP who was first elected to the riding of Simcoe Grey, which is in Ontario, in 2011. Prior to that, she was a pediatric surgeon and an associate professor at the University of Toronto before entering politics. We really didn't hear much about Kelly Leach prior to the kickoff of the election campaign, except for a few reported stories in the 2015 general election, if I recall.
Yeah, the only thing that we really heard about her very much before the 2015 election was that she was at the forefront of the conservative, I believe it was called the barbaric practices tip line. She was with Chris Alexander at the forefront of that.
Indeed. So following from that, that puts Kelly Leach in a position to be very much on the side of controlling immigration and supporting Canadian values. In a YouTube video she did last month, she said that as of right now, only 1 out of 5 new immigrants to Canada actually gets a face-to-face interview. So some of the things she wants to do in regards to shoring up immigration and Canadian values is to ensure that more immigrants to Canada get face-to-face interviews with border services and immigration agents, just to ensure that they are who they say they are, their documents are in order, and there's nothing particularly wrong about their cases. With this, she also wants to support a Canadian values test for new immigrants. Now, this doesn't mean that you need to subscribe to a certain religion or you can't be a part of certain religions or have certain views. What this means, according to her, and should be reported on more honestly through the mainstream media, is that all she wants for new immigrants to Canada is an agreement to abide by the Charter of Rights and Values, which was brought in the 1980s, actually. It had its anniversary just a couple days ago.
Mm-hmm.
She also claims to be the candidate that will take power away from the elites, very much focusing on the same populist messaging that President Trump has used in the U.S. Whether or not she is a part of the elite, that's a matter of opinion up for individuals. If you include $500 plate donation dinners elite, then she's probably a part of the elite. But if she, if her stance on immigration and standing up for individual Canadians is stepping away from the elites, then she's probably fulfilling this promise.
And I think when any politician says that they want to take power away from the elites, you have to really remember that as a politician and MP, they are one of the elites, whether
That's
they
right.
want to tell us that or not.
Yeah.
Whether they're elected or not, whether they're in government or cabinet or not, they are part of the system.
And the only way you can gauge true populism is by action, much the way that Ralph Klein did here in Alberta.
Yeah.
And she's also very friendly to gun owners, has sent out numerous campaign emails focused around firing ranges and ensuring that the RCMP and Ottawa bureaucracy don't unfairly target legally abiding firearm owners, which is a huge issue for many gun owners, given what happened during the High River floods of 2012 when the RCMP burst down the doors in the small town of High River, Alberta, and confiscated firearms when they weren't supposed to do that. She also wants to scrap the carbon tax, which is something that a very large number of the conservative leadership hopefuls say they will do come 2019. And I think that takes us to our part on electability, unless there's anything else on her policies that you'd like to bring up that I've glossed over.
I think there's something that we should also mention is that the media has been – probably even more so than any other candidate combined, they've been going after Kelly Leach for her Canadian values policy. And
right.
through social media, a lot of this Canadian values stuff is getting lambasted. And a lot of people are asking, well, how would you administer a Canadian values test? How would you even define what Canadian values are?
And because all it Canada, is, sorry, all it is, according to her campaign, is an agreement that you will abide by what is set out in the Charter,
mm-hmm.
that everyone is equal and very.
But a lot of people seem to get confused on this because, you know, I think it's undeniable that Canada is a very multicultural country and where lots of different backgrounds come together, especially in the bigger cities, to make this country the way it is. And it's also a gigantic country, second biggest in the world, and there's lots of different people from coast to coast. So I think a lot of people look at Canadian values and say, well, what is Canadian values? But I think really what it comes down to is being able to abide by Canadian law and the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And I think a lot of people don't really know that because the media isn't covering it fairly.
You hit the nail right on the head. And that's why a test for Canadian values or an agreement to Canadian values really isn't a far-fetched thing to ask for in this day and age. All right. Kelly Leach is probably going to have a high number of dedicated supporters who will turn out and mark her as number one on their ballot, especially from those who favor immigration control, controlling the border, Canadian values, and those who want a strong voice. Because I think if there's one thing that can be agreed on about Kelly Leach is that she has one of the strongest voices out there of any of the candidates if she wants to make a message known. She has the potential to come in very high on the first ballot, but then it's unknown where she will fall on subsequent ballots based on support. Because one thing that we didn't mention before this is that this Conservative Party leadership race is determined by a ranked ballot, where each time there is no one more than 50%, someone at the bottom gets dropped off and their votes get retallied.
Mm-hmm. And what's interesting here is that she probably has the most dedicated supporters, but there's also a very high number of people that don't like her and probably would not want to see her, so wouldn't rank her at all or on the last of the list. So I think it's going to be interesting to see where she falls in on later rounds when the so-called
dead weight
candidates. Yes, exactly.
All right. Who have you got next?
So who we have next is Aaron O'Toole. So he won the Durham, Ontario riding in a by-election in 2012 after the resignation of Bev Oda, and he was reelected in 2015. So previous to politics, he was a lawyer and a member of the Royal Canadian Legion, and he also had training in the Canadian Forces. Surprisingly, he has the highest number of support within the party, with the most MP endorsements so far. So with his military background, he wants to keep NATO commitments, and he vows to stand up for farmers, veterans, and firearms owners. He also wants the provinces to have greater control of healthcare, and he is a proponent of more limited government on our lives. He's also probably the least known of all of the front runners, and I think he has the least coverage of all of them as well. But he seems among the party to have the broadest support among Canada, but his base is especially in Ontario and Atlantic Canada. So I think that that broad support is actually very helpful to him, because every riding is equal, and if you win a riding with over 50% of the vote, then that counts towards your points total. And I think he is trying to place himself as not perhaps the first choice, but probably the second or third or fourth choice, so that he's able to rack up the points that way. And I think in his electability, he's probably only the first choice among military members and supporters, because he's so unknown. But he does have a lot of background with the military.
And one thing I think that can come from this is that, you know, he, as you said, he's not very covered in the mainstream media, but that's for a reason. And that's because I think you touched on part of it is that it comes from support within the party, but also his policies aren't as far out there as, say, Kelly Leach, Kevin O'Leary, or Maxime Bernier, for example. And, you know, he was a part of cabinet before, so it would be a very much steady as she goes approach if you were a former Conservative Party member and you were looking for maybe a second or third choice if your first choice wasn't going to win. So I think you
have exactly
right there.
And if you're a middle of the road Conservative who doesn't really swing far on many of the issues, he's probably your choice, because he doesn't want to change too much. He's more of a status quo sort of person.
Right. And, you know, this is where the question always comes up. Is the party going to shift too much that it's going to force people out? Well, no, that's the job of being leader, is that you need to account for the fact that this party was formed in 2003 and has had only one leader before. And it needs to be encompassing of everyone who wants to self-describe themselves as a conservative. So That is probably in his mind, and I think is in the mind of most of these players here who are ultimately going to make their way up to the top. So we might see a surprise on May 27th from Aaron O'Toole coming in higher than most people think.
Yeah, and probably a lot of people would ask, who is this person? They
Right.
probably recognize the names of O'Leary and Leach and Bernier and maybe Scheer, but they probably don't know anything about O'Toole. And honestly, before this, I think both of us probably didn't know that much about O'Toole either, but and still probably don't know that much about O'Toole because the media just hasn't been focused on him because nothing he subscribes to is very sensationalist or that they can really talk about that much.
Right.
It's one thing to say, well, I want to support the economy. I want to support veterans, have the provinces greater control of healthcare. There's nothing really newsworthy about all of that. That's like core conservative policies right there. He's not really reinventing the wheel.
And then there's going to be some people who will say, is that going to be enough to win an election against Justin Trudeau in 2019 if it's the same old Conservative Party from the previous Harper years? And that's going to be another debate that the mainstream media is going to have. But at the end of the day, it's the voters who are going to decide. It's not the mainstream media who decides. Because, you can have two people who serve in cabinet together, even have two people who are, say, prime minister and deputy prime minister, and they're going to have completely different styles, and it's going to change the party. So the answer to that question is always no. And it's up to the players to decide at the end of the day who are voting.
Exactly.
All right, so we go from someone who you guys might not have heard of to someone that probably everyone has heard of before, and that is Kevin O'Leary. Kevin O'Leary has some parallels to Donald Trump in that he has no previous political experience, but he has experience in the media as a former financial commentator on CBC, as well as panelist on Dragon's Den and Shark Tank in the US. And prior to all this, of course, he was a businessman and investor. So he is going to be representing the business wing of the party. And in some ways, that is his only claim to success here, because he describes himself as someone who isn't bilingual, but he speaks the language of jobs. That's his actual wording. So he doesn't speak French, which is really something that we haven't seen in a long time for a federal party leader. Can you remember a prime minister or member of the opposition, leader of the opposition, who didn't speak French?
Well, I think when Harper was first starting out, his French wasn't very good, but he did learn it very quickly and was very proficient very
Right.
soon after winning
Preston
opposition leader.
Manning was also one of those, I think, who didn't speak
Yeah.
French.
Yeah,
So.
I think a lot of them learn very quickly that they have to.
Yeah, and I mean, I think if you can become leader, learning the language isn't really that big of a problem. The language barrier that is always said, oh, he's not bilingual, he shouldn't be prime minister. That's, I think, another thing that's brought up by the media. At the end of the day, it's not going to matter who thinks he can speak English or French or not, and to what level he can do it in a good way. It's a matter of, can you get the job done? And that is what his entire campaign is about. He's focusing on tax cuts, fast-tracking immigration for high-skilled workers for sectors in demand. He wants to take the politics out of infrastructure spending decisions, prioritize investments that will drive domestic and trade growth, as well as reduce regulations and, as with the other two candidates, scrap the carbon tax. Or, I'm sorry, did Aaron O'Toole want to scrap the carbon tax? I don't think we mentioned that for him.
I don't think that he's really come out and said that much about it, but I believe that pretty much every candidate other than Michael Chong wants to scrap the carbon tax. So I think that it's pretty much a unifier issue that most
Except for
candidates do
Michael
want to do
Chong.
that, except for Michael Chong, of course,
Right.
who seems to be a bit of a bit of an outlier in this race.
Very much so. Anyways, we're not talking about Michael Chong right now. We're talking about Kevin O'Leary. So he is focused on the economy and the economy entirely. In fact, so much that he actually wants to increase immigration. He also has targeted all of these policies to grow the economy and, quote, unbridle Canada's national resource sector. Those of you guys who are following the Alberta election in 2015 will note that he has actually sent letters to Rachel Notley, encouraging her to resign. And if he does that, he will make a huge investment inside Alberta's natural resource sector. So as you can see, going back all the way to 2015, this has been a point that has really got Kevin O'Leary going and is really, I think, what he is going for is the kind of candidate that will be relentless and bloodthirsty when going up against Trudeau or Rachel Notley anytime they do something that is bad for the Canadian economy. Heck, even on his website, he says that he will force provinces to abandon their carbon taxes. So that is how far Kevin O'Leary is going to go, and he, based on this, is focused entirely on the economy. Now, when it comes to electability, I think he'll have a high number of first ballot supporters and could be second or third choice for many due to his high media profile and recognizability. Could this put him over the top? Maybe. Maybe not. Polling in this race is very unreliable and in general has been very unreliable. So it's really hard to get a picture of where the race is standing right now. But all indications seem to say that Kevin O'Leary is someone who's going to finish very high up on the list.
Yeah. And I think something about his candidacy is probably attributed to the success and the rise to power of Donald Trump. And I think O'Leary is not the same as Donald Trump in his policies and politics and even as a person. But I think it's something to be said that people do recognize his name. They've seen him on TV. They know who he is. They've probably watched or listened to something that he's been on before, which is more than all of the other candidates probably. And the media loves to talk about Kevin O'Leary because Kevin O'Leary likes to talk to the media. He has so much experience in it, and therefore it's really
he
raised his profile. Exactly.
And
he
it's
knows
free
how
advertising.
Yes, exactly. And he knows how to turn the media to his advantage, which is something that he says will be good for when he go if he wins and he goes up against Trudeau. He feels like he is the best one to defeat him based on the media.
And I think one more thing before we move on here, we were talking about how he is different and different than other people in the race. Yes, he's focused on the economy and most of them are, but in the past, Kevin O'Leary has actually wanted to pull back on military engagements, such as the Syria engagement. He didn't think that was a good thing. And he is very much socially moderate, supports gay marriage, doesn't really want to touch any of the social issues and is pretty much just okay with the way things have been going on that file, as in not rolling back anything relating to gay marriage or abortion in Canada.
And he's also a proponent to legalize marijuana as well, which is another socially liberal policy of his. So he's not really as conservative as a lot of other candidates. He's probably more of a red Tory, I think you could describe him. But he is very economically conservative and very much economy first.
And we might just need that in 2019. But as I said previously, we'll need to see what the voters feel is going to be the priority in 2019 and what the conservative base feels the priority is next month.
Exactly.
All right. Next up.
Next up is Andrew Scheer. He is the MP of Regina Capel, which is in Saskatchewan, and he's been elected there with fairly high numbers since 2004, and he was elected as the youngest Speaker of the House of Commons from 2011 to 2015. He was also a career politician because he is one of the youngest candidates in this race. I believe he is the youngest candidate, and he was first elected at age 25. But of course, before that, he studied history and politics in university and post-secondary. So he's been basically involved with politics for most of his adult life. He also has the second highest party support, but most of his support is heavily concentrated in Western Canada. He's been called Stephen Harper with a smile, and he doesn't actually shy away from that very much. He considers it an honor to be compared to Stephen Harper. And he also vows to stand up for Western Canada, and basically he's the only candidate from Western Canada with a real shot of winning.
We got Brad Trost, also from Saskatchewan.
And also Andrew Saxton from BC. But they're polling pretty low, but the nature of the conservative race is that really anyone could win at this point. So we'll have to see how the first ballot goes, of course. But back to Andrew Scheer and his policies. He, like most of the conservatives in the race, aimed for fiscal responsibility, a balanced budget above everything else, and to have lower taxes. He also argues that economic growth must come first, and the first on his agenda to realize that is to scrap the carbon tax. And he's been very much a proponent of scrapping the carbon tax, saying that it unfairly impacts prairie farmers, which is very true when you think about it. He also believes that the southern border crossings are a problem, and he argues in favor of a more robust screening process, but not based on Leach's Canadian values. He wants to have it so that there's more border security, there's more immigration officers to be able to screen people that come in, but he doesn't want it to be based on anything like Canadian values. He just simply wants it to be more of a criminal record check to make sure that the people that are coming in are law-abiding citizens. He's also described himself as pro-life, but like Stephen Harper, he doesn't want to legislate on the topic, and he believes that everyone should be able to choose for themselves, which is an interesting side of pro-life, I think.
It's an interesting and very forward-looking side of it.
Exactly. And I think in Canadian politics, I don't think there's much political capital to be gained on legislating on pro-life issues, I think, just because the diverse country that we have, of course. And I think he sees himself as someone who can bring all wings of the Conservative Party together, whether you're an economic conservative or a social conservative or a libertarian or someone who wants less government. I think he sees himself as someone who can bring all of those people together into a unified Conservative Party. And he also has probably the most experience in Ottawa and the House of Commons. And he feels that being the speaker for the House of Commons and having as much experience as he has in Ottawa, that he can navigate the political waters to be able to defeat Trudeau. And I think in the past month or so, he's raised his profile in the media quite a bit and on social media to be able to reach a lot of people that probably don't know much about him.
And I think that is ultimately the trajectory that the internal sides of the party wants to take. Because there was a time when this race first started and Andrew Scheer was in that he had the most endorsements out of the existing caucus, which makes sense because the caucus is going to look for someone who is a unifier and is something like we had before and is going to be able to keep that same internal structure and internal civility going forward. And I think Andrew Scheer is qualified for that, especially because of his previous experience as speaker, which isn't an easy job.
No, and you definitely have to unify quite a bit as the speaker.
Yeah.
And I think it's also important to note that he still does have quite a bit of party support among a lot of the MPs and the senators that are in office right now, but he also has a lot of former MPs and senators and a lot of higher ups in the Conservative Party that support him as well. And he, as being able to be electable, he's probably the first choice among a lot of Western Canadians who don't really see another strong candidate there. But he's also trying to portray himself as a likable second choice for many who do see him as a unifier among the party. And as a lot of people that may look at some of the others and think, well, I don't really want that anything too crazy, I'll go with Andrew Scheer because he's going to be more moderate when it comes to his policies.
So basically the sense I'm getting from this is that Andrew Scheer and Aaron O'Toole are kind of in the same wheelhouse.
Kind of. I think that Scheer has a bit more teeth to him, and I think he also has more experience. When it comes to O'Toole,
more conservative credentials.
Yeah, I think when it comes to Scheer, he's probably more pro-Western Canada, pro-farmers, pro-farmers, pro-immigration policies, whereas O'Toole is more to do with the military. So, and O'Toole also has a lot more support in Atlantic Canada. So basically, they're the West and East versions of themselves. But I think that Scheer, with his political experience, has probably a higher chance of winning than O'Toole does.
Yeah, and the second choice factor, I think, too.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
All right, well, that takes us to our last candidate, and that's Maxime Bernier, who was first elected in 2006 in Quebec for the riding of Beauce. Before politics, he was a lawyer and vice president of the Standard Life Insurance Company. He has high support in Quebec, as well as Alberta, which includes most of the Wild Rose Caucus here, who is the official opposition. Maxime Bernier is a libertarian conservative and is a strong advocate of limited government. His platform is almost as focused on the economy as Kevin O'Leary's, except his is focused on pure free market economics. Along with this, he wants to eliminate supply management, which is what you might have been hearing in the news recently that has come up between a potential issue between Canada and the U.S. dairy markets. He also wants to scrap the federal carbon tax. He's going to be friendly to gun owners and wants Ottawa to, quote, get out of healthcare, meaning that Ottawa will transfer the tax points to the provinces, allowing them to focus on delivery and efficiency. So, as you can see, Maxime Bernier is really focused on limiting the scope of government and ensuring that the people at the end of the day are the benefactors from what government exists, and that people don't need to give any more money than they absolutely have to towards this central government in Ottawa. And, you know, Maxime Bernier, I think, has taken on a life of his own in terms of having lots of support on university campuses, it looks like, which
yes,
is
and,
a little bit,
and he has quite a bit of support among social media.
Yeah, he's a very popular candidate online. And, you know, as we saw in various elections in the past, that can actually mean something. So if he was able to translate that and become leader at the end of May and then repeat that same success in 2019, that might be an interesting angle to look at for his candidacy. So that leads into electability, which means that ultimately I think he's going to have a very broad base of support, especially coming from Alberta and Quebec. And he is going to have the potential to finish higher on the first ballot, but I don't think is likely to be second or third choices among many people, the same way that Andrew Scheer and Aaron O'Toole will end up being.
But I think that among youth, I think he probably has a fair chance of finishing first or second on a lot of their ballot choices, because there's not too many high profile ones to choose from for youth. And Bernier does have the social media credentials to be able to do this. He's probably the highest profile candidate on social media, even surpassing Kevin O'Leary, who you'd think would be more popular because of his recognizability. But Bernier actually takes the cake when it comes to that.
Yeah, they even make memes for Maxime Bernier, which basically means that they take a very popular picture that was on the internet or from a movie or from a TV show and paste some related text that Maxime Bernier said on it and send it viral on social media. So, and that can be very powerful as well. And also not to mention the support that comes out of Quebec. You know, all you got to do is look back to the Mulroney governments with support of Quebec nationalists. Maybe Maxime Bernier could establish something like this if he becomes a leader.
Yeah, and I think it can't be discounted that Quebec is very important to this leadership race, because it is the province that has the second number of ridings. And there's so many Ontario candidates. I think there's at least four or five. So the support for Ontario is going to be very split, but it looks like Quebec is only with two candidates, which means that if he wins a lot of ridings in Quebec, it means that he has a much higher chance of being elected the leader.
And you hit on a very good point here. It's not a matter of who wins the most ridings. If you get, say, 65% of the vote in one riding, you get 65 points from that riding. Each riding is worth 100 points. So you want to finish as well as you can in as many ridings. So this is an advantage for him in Quebec. So that could produce some interesting results.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something we should have mentioned at the start, is that it's a point system, not a popular vote system. Hence why we have a ranked ballot. All right. Well, anything else on Maxime Bernier or any of the other candidates before we head off for this week?
I think it's really up to the people to decide who is going to be elected. And I hope the listeners who listen to this take a look at all of the candidates and are able to make their own informed choices without any bias that comes in from the media.
Indeed, because, I mean, you never hear about any of these candidates on the nightly news, even if there is an issue that is within their wheelhouse. It's almost as though there could be situations where they are brought up, but they're not. They're just ignored. Take yesterday's story about supply management in Wisconsin that President Trump was talking about. That could have been a situation where Maxime Bernier could have got a mention on the mainstream media, but this leadership race is absent in most media unless someone makes an outrageous statement on Twitter or Facebook. So,
mm-hmm. And I think one station that I just caught to when I went into the room and the TV was on was that supply management isn't going to become an issue in the election, so that they don't see it becoming that big. Well, that political commentator doesn't realize that all of the issues have importance when it comes to the leadership election and the upcoming federal election that will happen in 2019. All of these issues together will be what causes people to support a certain candidate or something else.
And at the end of the day, that support then translates into a stronger support against the current government, and we'll have to see where that falls across Canada, and maybe we'll have a change of government in 2019. And that is why mm-hmm. we're talking about this today, is to shine the light on these candidates who, you know, if you didn't go out and look for information on them, they would remain relatively obscure. So hopefully this rundown that we did here of these candidates has been useful to you guys. So I think we can say that we'll be back next week for our standard episode in which we run through the news of the week. And in the meantime, if you are watching on YouTube, you can like this video, subscribe, or find us on Twitter and Facebook at RightsideCA. Thank you for sharing your time with us, and we'll see you next week.
We will see you next week.